Welcome, everybody, to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Drew Dinkmeyer. I'm going to be joined by Ricky Sanders this week. And it is Thursday, which for the first time all season, we are on schedule with our game-by-game breakdown. Week one, we did it Wednesday, so we could kind of cover, get that out in front, and then do a showdown pod. Week two, Ricky and Davis stole our podcast with the game-by-game breakdown on a Wednesday. So we're actually doing it on the correct day at the correct time, breaking down week three. Ricky, how has the football season treated you so far?
It's been good to me. I mean, I have not historically been a mass multi-entry player, as you know, when you brought me on board. Single entry was kind of my specialty, but I have since branched out and been playing with the Daily Roto tools, you know, trying to be one of the subscribers, and it has been very good to me. I was very close to a bink last week on Fantasy Draft. I needed that overtime in Houston-Jacksonville, and then, of course, Jacksonville goes for it on whatever it was, you know, with like 30 seconds left when they had the chance to tie the game. But other than that small complaint, it's been really good, and I feel like I have a good feel for it, so I think this should be a fun podcast.
Yeah, we've had a good start. The content contributors and certainly many of the subscribers over at Daily Roto during the football season. We've run great on Showdown again. Colin and Mike have each won some Showdown slates. We will not be covering Showdown for that wonderful Jacksonville, Tennessee game that I know you are all craving content for. If you are interested in getting the breakdown of our Showdown content and all of our premium content at dailyroto.com, use that promo code LAUNCH for 10% off. We will be going game by game, starting with the Sunday 1 o'clock games. Let's kick it off with Atlanta traveling to Indianapolis. The Colts are 2-point favorites here. In terms of news and notes to kind of start the game and what's going on the injury side as we record this on Thursday, the biggest thing from a DFS perspective to keep an eye on Wednesday, Marlon Mack missed some practice with a calf issue. And obviously, you know, The Indy offense isn't as compelling without Andrew Luck, but it's been very ball control oriented, very run heavy. And if Marlon Mack is to miss time, that would open up opportunities for both Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins. It's a Wednesday practice early in the week. That's something running backs often miss, but it is something to keep an eye on. Also, Darius Leonard in concussion protocol, the Colts star middle linebacker. So that's an interesting situation to watch. Ricky, in terms of the game, what are the plays that you're considering from this game, either for cash games or for tournaments? What stands out to you?
So I feel like this game has sneaky game stack possibilities on this slate. I think like Kansas City, Baltimore feels like, I don't want to get political, but it feels like if this were the debates, you know, that would be the main stage and no one would be talking about anything else. And this feels like one of those games with both teams projected over 60 plays. And just specifically on DraftKings, that Jacoby Brissett $5,200 price really has my attention. You look at this team's like targets so far. And by the way, we should mention with Marlon Mack, it was a weird update where it was like he was walking with a walking boot, but it wasn't on.
Yeah, he was walking with a walking boot on his shoulder, which I was like, I need a little more clarity here. If he's wearing the boot on his shoulder and how they make boots for shoulders now, or if the boot is slung over his shoulder. But yeah, it was a very strange update.
Yeah, so I don't know what to make of that. But I do know that when you have a $5,200 quarterback and a guy who's been clearly dominating the targets, T.Y. Hilton, almost a 56% share of the target market share, that there's a pretty easy like correlation you could run there that's inexpensive. And I've been doing some of these tournament recaps, and for the past over a year, there have been a lot of occasions where just a cheap quarterback and, you know, relatively cheap pass catcher mixed with some of the better plays on the slate have won. I feel like Jacoby Brissett Hilton has the potential for that. The problem is, where do you go in like the red zone here? Because they've got two tight ends, and like if they get to that point, I'm not sure who catches the touchdown. But I have enough faith in a site like DraftKings where you get like the 100-yard bonus that Hilton would be the guy that I would pair with Brissett.
Yeah, so I think the good side of the offense you alluded to there is the concentration in the targets. Hilton with 55% of the market share of targets through the first week. Actually, wait, I'm double checking that stat because I'm wondering if our tool was like a little bit off when we were looking at target shares with that Hilton number, because he has 15 of the team's like 30 or 40, so not quite 55%. So I think our target share was calculating off of week one. But yeah, a huge target share for TY early in the season. So concentrated offense there. I like that aspect. I like the price tag on Brissett, as you mentioned. But Matt Ryan's also cheap at 5,700. I think Matt Ryan is a little bit easier to stack in terms of, you know, using double stacks in tournaments because there are multiple pass catchers you can consider from Atlanta's side. So I think this game, I'm kind of with you that this game is sneaky in the sense that I don't think there'll be ownership or like the very early ownership projections from UFC, Unsourced Fantasy Collective, who provide our ownership projections, have Julio at like 4% on DraftKings, have TY at like 8%. TY obviously has that historical home road split. So a lot of things kind of working in favor for this game with potential low ownership. I do think the concern is obviously that Indy just plays so slow. So you kind of need the right game script to happen. You need Atlanta to kind of get out in front early so the game can speed up a little bit, or you need a big play or two. T.Y. Hilton is capable of generating those big plays. But in general, the Falcons defense has historically done a very good job at limiting big plays. They're a defense that, you know, plays a little bit more of kind of the cover two type shell defense, where you basically like open up the middle of the field and allow a lot of those dump offs to running backs. So I think this game is interesting because there won't be ownership. It's played in pristine conditions in the dome. The price tags are pretty decent. But I obviously have concerns over pace, which I think many people will. Let's move it over to the next game, New England and the New York Jets. And this is just, I can't believe the opening schedule that New England just has dealing with this incompetence in this division in the AFC East. The Jets now without Sam Darnold, without Trevor Siemian, obviously tons of injury issues there to monitor. The Patriots, I will note that Tom Brady was on the injury report with a calf issue. Again, it's Wednesday. Tom Brady went like 2.5 consecutive years of being questionable on the injury report with a shoulder injury and like never missed a game. So I don't think it's anything to be super concerned about. The Jets don't have a lot of players that I think you're very interested in here. And I cannot believe, is this total right? Do the Jets have an 11-point total?
Looks right to me.
This is insane. I don't think I've ever seen, I mean, they opened at 13. The Dolphins opened at 13 as well. Like, these two offenses are just really, really challenging things. And obviously, the Patriots have only allowed 3 points through two games. So from a DFS perspective, you know, I think we can safely just ignore the Jets. What do we do with the Patriots when they are like 20-point favorites? Like, this is insane. The tank fest, and the Jets aren't even tanking, but just injuries early in the season is just getting us some ridiculous lines.
It feels like another week where you could easily set a rule minimum one Patriots player, and I think I would include the defense in that, by the way. Just to have some exposure to a team that I just feel like is going to dominate the time of possession once again. I don't think Luke Falk is, you know, scaring you whatsoever. And the question, again, is which New England players to run out there. I'm under the assumption that, you know, it's not going to hit the fan yet for Antonio Brown. It looks like, I think those charges were dropped in whatever state they were in for the moment. So we expect him to be out there. He played, 33% of the snaps last week. And when he was on the field, they targeted the living hell out of him. I mean, 8 targets in, 24 total snaps. So he was literally targeted 1/3 of the snaps that he was on the field. I feel like that was, you know, like you kind of mentioned, maybe an ego stroke for Antonio yeah. Brown to try and get him involved. But this is another game with like the same sort of game script where like New England is going to dominate, so we might as well just keep working on the chemistry with Antonio Brown. I have a hard time not including him, like a fair amount of him as well. Just seeing how they used him when he was on the field. You have another week of him with the playbook. I think he's the one that I have the highest degree of confidence in, but I think the masses will feel that way as well. So I'm kind of wondering what your take is here. I definitely want the defense. I definitely want some Tom Brady. I definitely have interest in Antonio Brown, potentially even in cash games if we can, you know, feel good about him playing in this one. But then it's just the same old Patriots.
Yeah, 5 red zone targets in that first game for Antonio Brown. 5 of his 8 targets overall came in the red zone, and second on the team in red zone opportunities behind Sony Michel in that game. And it's obviously, you know, it's a tricky spot for me because anytime you get these teams with implied totals in the 30s, mid-30s, it's not hard to see scenarios where they score into the 40s. When you score into the 40s, there's so many touchdowns to go around that it's not hard to see any one player kind of hit that upside. In terms of adding Antonio Brown to the mix with Julian Edelman and Josh Gordon, there's more ways to spread things around now. And so I feel like I'll have some exposure to a lot of Patriots, but I probably won't be really heavy on anyone. If I was, it would be Antonio Brown for the reasons you mentioned. I think the price is still down a little bit. He's 7,100 on DraftKings, which is a pretty amenable price tag. But I don't believe we have any wide receivers over 8,000 this week. So a lot of the high-end wide receivers have kind of come down in pricing. Josh Gordon was not heavily used, and it seemed like they were splitting snaps in two wide receiver sets between Gordon and Brown a little bit more. Gordon did see two red zone targets in the first week, but none in week two. His price tag is pretty reasonable. I think he would only be a tournament consideration for me. I think Antonio Brown has some cash game viability. It just depends on kind of how you're building this week. He probably won't enter my cash game lineup. On DraftKings, on FanDuel, a little bit more in play because at 7,700 there, I think that's a pretty good price tag. And there's a little bit fewer in terms of like the great wide receiver values, I think, on FanDuel. So I'm torn. I don't know if I'm going to have a lot of Brady double stacks. I feel like Brady is a quarterback that you have to double stack if you're using him in tournaments. The price is certainly elevated enough that it makes it so that you need three or four touchdowns and you need to find them to the right guys. Sony Michel is priced up a little bit, so I probably won't be going there, even though I could certainly see a two touchdown performance from Sony Michel, and that would surprise no one. I think, again, he's more in play on FanDuel because of the scoring requirements over there. And James White, you know, we saw his target share come way down last week with the combination of the game script and Antonio Brown being kind of force fed. So I'm kind of torn. I think Antonio Brown and Sony Michel make sense. I think all the guys make sense a little bit more on FanDuel than they do on DraftKings because FanDuel is a site that is more touchdown dependent in terms of its scoring. But I don't think I'm going to be super, super heavy on the Pats and GPPs this week, which is a scary proposition, as we talked about with like the week one situation where Lamar Jackson and Baltimore just go nuclear, because that's certainly in the range of outcomes here.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. I want them spread, but I don't have conviction in one single Patriot.
All right, let's move it over to Denver and Green Bay, another relatively low total game here. Denver, you know, over a touchdown underdog traveling into Green Bay here with a total of 44 on the board. In terms of the injury situations and the news and notes to kind of follow in this game, you know, I think one of the interesting comments that came out of the week after Aaron Jones kind of had a big week and was heavily involved in GPP winning lineups was, you know, that LaFleur and the coaching staff for Green Bay talked about how they really want to even up more of those carries with Jamal Williams. And it's interesting because that hasn't really been the case. Jones has had a good market share of the carries early on, but it's something to keep in the back of your mind in terms of the upside for a guy like Aaron Jones. He's going to have to get it through the touchdowns because he's probably not going to rack up like 25 plus touch games. That being said, in terms of injury situations to follow up here, Jimmy Graham would not have practiced. The Packers just had a walkthrough on Wednesday, which is a league-wide trend. A lot of teams are just going to walkthroughs, which means the practice reports are estimates of if they had practiced, this is what we guess would happen. And again, Wednesday for veterans early in the week when they miss time, I don't get too nervous. I wait till Friday, essentially, with older veterans like Jimmy Graham. But he was estimated that he would have missed it with a growing injury. On the Denver side, there's not much in the way of concern. Emmanuel Sanders didn't practice on Wednesday, but that's going to be a common thing with him in his recovery from the Achilles injury. So, and he's obviously looked great early in the season. In terms of plays for this game, Ricky, what's catching your eye?
The one guy here, like other than the Green Bay defense as a potential mix-in, is Marcus Valdez-Scantling for me. A guy who continues to play the second most snaps here. And like, you look at this Denver defense, you got Vic Fangio, who I have respect for having, you know, being a Bears fan. you look at, you know, him going to this defense, you expected them to be good. They rank in the top half of coverage so far. And as expected, Chris Harris was shadowing last week. And now I'm willing to use Aaron Rodgers' pass catchers. I think Davante Adams would be a guy I would mix in there as well. You just know it's going to be a tough matchup for him this week. And if it's anything like last week where Allen Robinson was targeted just four times during the shadow, that could lead to a bit of a funnel elsewhere. And I think Marquez Valdes-Scantling would be the guy that gets some of that funnel. I know Allison scored the touchdown last week, but you know, looking at the deployment of these two players so far, you got Valdes-Scantling 107 total snaps to Geronimo Allison 66. So I think he's the higher percentage play. He costs just $4,300 on DraftKings. He's the guy that I will likely be boosting because I do see some volume headed his way, especially if there's no Jimmy Graham, by the way.
Yeah, so it's interesting what Jimmy Graham would do because the Packers have been playing a lot more two tight end sets this year, and that's why you've seen Geronimo Allison's snap count kind of come way down. Valdes-Scantling and Adams are the guys playing the two wides. And so Allison comes in that slot, third receiver role. If Graham wasn't to play, I'm wondering if they would open it back up to more three wide receiver sets, more 11 personnel, and instead get more playing time for Allison. I think Valdes-Scantling is cheap enough and big play threat enough that he's certainly worthy of consideration in tournaments. I think the interesting thing for me is what to do with some of these Denver guys, because there's some good price tags on the Denver guys, but obviously it's, you know, not the greatest situation going on the road against the Green Bay defense. It's played pretty darn well early in the season, but Philip Lindsay's 4,300 and he's had like 16-17% market share of the targets early in the season, getting targeted heavily as Joe Flacco has been targeting the running backs quite a bit. Manny Sanders is just 4,800 and he's had 20-ish targets in the first two games. So there's a lot of opportunity at relatively cheap price tags. You've also got, you know, Cortland Sutton at 4,500, Royce Freeman at 4,400, that when you start looking through this game, I see paths on each side where there's skill position talent that I'm interested in, but the game itself does not have the kind of pace of play that I would be excited about to stack. So what I would probably consider doing is kind of capping exposure to max one skill player of each of these teams in all my runs, but still get some exposure to them. Lindsay is just like a pure value play, but I'm not sure the upside is there. So it's a tricky spot. I think it's a good spot for cash games, that he's a viable cash game option on DraftKings with the full PPR. But in tournaments, I probably don't want to have really heavy exposure there. Aaron Jones still is sub 7K on FanDuel, so I think he's still certainly in the mix on FanDuel over there. On DraftKings, the price tag for Aaron Jones at 6,100, I think, is also very viable. Teams have been attacking Denver heavily on the ground early in the season. We saw that with both the Bears and Oakland's game plans, and have generally run pretty effectively. So I think Aaron Jones is certainly in the mix. I probably won't have a lot of Rodgers. I probably won't have a ton of Davante Adams just because there's other higher-end wide receivers that I'm more excited about their volume potential. I think this game has a lot of plays for a game that has a relatively modest total just because the pricing is relatively affordable, especially on DraftKings where it's a little bit more PPR centric, and Flacco is not pushing the ball down the field, so it's a lot of high completion type situations for the cheaper guys. Let's move over to Oakland, Minnesota. Stay with the theme of AFC West versus NFC North here. Oakland traveling to Minnesota, almost double-digit point underdogs here on the road. Minnesota, hefty implied total. I guess I shouldn't say hefty when everybody else, like, there's a bunch of 30s on this slate, but over 26 is a pretty strong implied total at home. In terms of the news and notes to follow along here, you know, the Raiders came out with some news on the injury report after the loss to Kansas City with Tyrell Williams being banged up that we have to keep an eye on. I believe Josh Jacobs had like a hip issue. So we have to kind of keep practice notes on both of those guys. For Minnesota, they're relatively healthy, especially on the offensive side of the ball. There's not too much to be concerned about. And given the fact that, you know, Oakland is 10-point underdogs essentially, and they only have an implied total in the teens, I don't think it's a spot where you're super excited about targeting Oakland guys. So, yes, we'll be monitoring the injury information, but I'm not even sure it will really unveil much unless Tyrell was out, and then maybe, you know, maybe it bumps up Darren Waller and Hunter Renfro as, like, you know, salary relief plays for MME. But I don't think there's a lot that you want to play on an Oakland offense going into Minnesota.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, that Tyrell injury was a hip pointer, which is usually a week or two. So I think there's a solid chance that he sits out, but it doesn't really matter because Minnesota is the side of this game that I'm more interested in. I think I'd be setting the rule of maximum one Oakland pass catcher because the offense looks a little bit like a mess, and I think they'll be playing from behind. So it's certainly possible that Darren Waller sees a fair amount of volume, enough so that he's a viable play. But with Minnesota, this team is so extremely run heavy this year. I mean, their ads advertised, you know, people were still drafting those wide receivers high, and it just looks like a team that is really focused on Dalvin Cook, Alexander Mattison, pounding the ball down the throats of opponents. Like, I am to the point where I think for the remainder of the year, I'm valuing Dalvin Cook as a top five back. I don't see how you could have watched him so far and say that he's not. I understand there are some injury concerns. And look, this matchup against Oakland, like, Oakland has looked like a decent running, you know, defense so far, but they haven't really played anyone that we're too scared of. Like, last week, Kansas City just threw on them. So, I mean, the fact that they're fourth in DVOA, like, Kansas City didn't really try and run on them. And the first week, you had Denver, which, okay, fine. But I think Dalvin Cook's a completely different story. I'm back on him. You look at the price difference between him and, like, McCaffrey. McCaffrey almost 1,000 more on DraftKings. The volume Dalvin Cook is seeing, I'm just pretty much a confident every week. He's pretty much a confident every week start for me. I'm not sure he's the cash game back this week, but he's not far, you know, outside of that consideration.
Yeah, you know, this team's run the ball 61% of the play calls through the first 2 weeks of the season, so the volume for Dalvin Cook should be there. I think the concern is as the price tag rises for Dalvin Cook, you just need a little bit more in the passing game to be assured of each week. And he has maintained a good market share of targets early in the season in that 12 to 15% range. But if they're just not going to throw very much on the whole, then all those touches that are you know, just rush attempts aren't as valuable as getting the work in the passing game. So I think he's a fine play. I think he'll be heavily owned. So, you know, he's a play that I probably won't have a ton of leverage on in GPPs. Kirk Cousins is really cheap, and obviously we saw Patrick Mahomes go up and down the field. He goes up and down the field against everybody, so I don't think there's much to take away there. Thielen and Diggs are getting cheaper, but probably not cheap enough. I still think ownership is going to keep, you know, those Cousins, Thielen, Diggs stacks relatively low. So if you happen to find the right game for it, I think you can get paid off on it. I'm not sure this is the one. So I probably won't have a ton there, but Cook is really the main play. And then Minnesota's defense, I think, is pretty interesting too. Derek Carr last week, after, you know, they got well behind Kansas City, he didn't even attempt to, you know, throw the ball down the field at all. So this could be a game, again, where, you know, Minnesota's defense is in play in GPPs. All right, let's move it over to Dallas and Miami. Dallas is 20 plus point favorites at home. They have an implied total over 34. In terms of the news and notes for the injury situations, Dallas obviously has some to keep an eye on. Michael Gallup's going to be out a few weeks. That'll open up some opportunity for Devin Smith, who had one of the most ridiculous final season stat lines in college that I think I've ever seen, where he caught, I believe it was 33 passes, and 12 of them were touchdowns for Ohio State. Ohio State just seemingly has this weird history, like, of producing receivers who don't have huge college seasons but come in the NFL and produce right away, like Michael Thomas and now Terry McLaurin. Devin Smith was not that guy with the Jets, but he will step into a more prominent role this week. In terms of other injury situations, the Dolphins were still waiting to see with Albert Wilson. He's dealing with hip and calf issues. He missed last week's game. He sat out Wednesday's practice. It opens up more volume opportunity for the Dolphins guys in general, but it's just tough to get behind anyone on the Dolphins offense right now. Rashad Jones, recovering from an ankle injury, also missed practice on Wednesday. He sat out last week. He's one of their better players. And I just feel like at this point with a lot of the Dolphins guys, if they're banged up at all, these guys are probably going to be like, why would I go out there for this team at this point? So I think you're going to continue to see depleted talent units for Miami. Obviously, I think from a plays perspective, it's going to be a lot of plays on the Dallas side that you're going to be interested in. The question, like the Patriots last week, is going to be how much, and do you attack stacks? Do you still see the upside there? What says you, Ricky?
Yeah, I think this is the one spot where I feel comfortable pairing a quarterback with a pass catcher and still running the running back. Because if there's a team that I think can score 40 points, I think I feel more confident about this one than the Patriots. The Jets' defense, at least in terms of coverage, is actually graded well. This defense has just been horrific. I mean, they're going to get blasted every week. They're traded their talent away. We've got, you know, Zeke going for more volume this week. You look at, you know, Zeke's snaps. He's played 90 so far. They're kind of ramping him up. He went from 54% to 75%, which I only think is going to get higher as it goes on. And I think this is, you know, the matchup where if they get up later in the game, then they just smash Zeke. So, I mean, this Kellen Moore offense has looked incredibly impressive. If we get, you know, or when we get Gallup out, it becomes a little bit more condensed. Maybe Devin Smith, like you said, you know, works into the mix. I am fine going Dak, you know, with minimum one pass catcher, and I'm fine allowing Ezekiel Elliott in those lineups. I think the interesting thing to me is, like, from these teams that are going to get smoked between Miami and the Jets, I think the one play that I would, like, have exposure to between the two teams and feel okay about it is Le'Veon Bell, because of the – we didn't really talk about him in that last one because of the volume. But, like, other than that, I can't imagine running back a Miami player, like, at all. I mean, they're just
I swear
so
to God
bad.
I thought you were going to bring up Mike Gesicki.
No.
I was so prepared for it. I was so ready. I was chomping at the bit to just mock the Gesicki selection. But I think the guy on Miami, the guy that I would be most interested in if you were going to consider it all for, and this would be for MME play, and it would be a situation where I wouldn't force a comeback on Dallas stacks, but I would key boost a comeback, which is something we can do in our optimizer. The guys that would be interested there would be Preston Williams or Devontae Parker, assuming Albert Wilson doesn't play. Devontae Parker is actually second in the league in air yards, I believe, through the first 2 weeks, just hasn't converted on any of them, which is going to be a problem for this offense. But yeah, I think from a cash game perspective, the challenge for me is, you know, there's a lot of offensive environments I'd like to attack this week, but the Dallas guys are just like breaking our projections because of the efficiency Miami's allowing and the plays they're allowing people to ramp up in these huge implied totals. And so I think it's totally fine to play like Dak and Zeke together in cash and basically say, I'm going to try to take all of the Dallas offensive touchdowns and put them into my cash lineup and feel pretty good that you're probably getting minimum three, maximum five or six and then tilt your face off when Tony Pollard comes in and, you know, gets three goal line. but I think it's possible to consider that route. I think Devin Smith is interesting in tournaments. I think basically all of the primary Cowboys guys are viable in cash, including Randall Cobb, who should bump up in terms of target share with the absence of Michael Gallup. Amari Cooper is fine as well. I think the Cowboys will be able to go up and down the field at their will. And in terms of tournaments, I do think there's enough upside. I think you have to be cognizant of the price tags when you're building in the upside. So, like, for instance, if you're stacking Dak with Amari and Zeke, because those guys are all relatively on the higher end of the pricing spectrum, you really are going to need to find, I would say, probably three touchdowns between Zeke and Amari to have that pay off in an effective way. So I do think you need to be thoughtful in terms of how much exposure you have to the highest priced guys. I would like more of my Dallas stacks to have a second guy that's like a Randall Cobb or Devin Smith, or even, I know Mike mentioned in our simulations article that even a guy like Blake Jarwin was popping into some simulations simply because of the high total. So I think that's one thing that I just wanted to mention that I think you should be cognizant of. Let's move it, since that game, you know, was not super exciting, let's move it to the game that I think will be the most exciting for most people all week, this Kansas City-Baltimore game. Baltimore travels into Kansas City. The total opened up, if I remember right, the total opened up in the mid-50s, 54, 55, and has come down to 52. That is consistent, and I just want to promote quickly, that is consistent with the Sports Grid betting model that we have. That was developed by Arturo Galletti and has been favorable to Kansas City unders at home historically. That is one of our few five-star plays, is the under in this game with a listed total at 52.5. It's a five-star play on the under. As a reminder, if you are interested in sports betting, we have our sports betting model for free. It's up on sportsgrid.com, and you can go under the NFL betting section. You can see the model picks with the star ratings there. We submit those to BetPros. Betting Pros contest, I believe last year finished inside the top 10, and this year inside the top 10 through 2 weeks. So if you're a sports gambler out there, there's a free outlet for you. You don't have to pay for picks. We've got them on the Sports Grid site for free. Ricky, I should mention news and notes in terms of who's injured, what we're paying attention to. The biggest thing by far this week,
yep,
is what the heck is going on in the Chiefs backfield. Damian Williams and LeSean McCoy both exited the fourth quarter game against the Raiders with leg injuries. Damian Williams, a knee issue. LeSean McCoy, an ankle issue. They did not practice on Wednesday. The hope was LeSean might do a little bit of stuff. So it sounded like he was slightly ahead of Damian. Obviously, if they both sit, it's going to be Darwin Thompson season. Everybody's going to be excited about potentially playing Darwin Thompson, who flashed quite a bit in the preseason, got a lot of hype behind him. But this feels like a situation that I feel like we're going to be heading into Sunday morning waiting on. I don't think we're going to get early week clarity on this situation. So it's one you're going to have to monitor. Darwin Thompson is 4,500 on FanDuel. So that's the bare minimum there. On DraftKings, he's 3,000, the bare minimum there. And I think he would be the highest owned play on the slate if both Damian Williams and LeSean McCoy were unable to go.
Well, also, I don't know if you've been reading Twitter in the last 24 hours. I've seen some people tweeting about Daryl Williams being the biggest beneficiary here, and I'm kind of Nick Young question mark facing that analysis. Having looked at these snaps, haven't seen how Darwin Thompson played in the preseason, I don't understand why you would go in a different direction other than Darwin Thompson. He seems like a pretty elite playmaker as well. And like, you look at this Baltimore defense, it looks like it's going to be like running into a brick wall. I mean, their defensive tackles are ridiculous. Pernell McPhee, who, again, is a Bears fan, you probably are accustomed to. Patrick Ricard, they have both played incredibly well. I mean, both of them great as number one at their position so far to this season. They've allowed like 20 rushing yards per game. So if you're playing a Kansas City back, I don't think I'm comfortable with the skill set of LeSean McCoy in this game, especially, you know, if with the total moving down. I want the guys that are going to be catching passes out of the backfield. So, like, Damian Williams, to me, is the better fit in terms of his talent level. But if they're both out, like, I don't know how you don't go Darwin Thompson. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm just not understanding Daryl Williams hype.
So I think what will happen is I think Daryl Williams will get more carries than Darwin Thompson in that scenario. And I think what people might be speculating on is, like, we'd like the guy that's on the field a little bit more, which I think could be Daryl Williams in that spot. I don't think from a fantasy perspective he would be nearly as valuable, though, because, as you alluded to, very difficult to run on Baltimore. And as we saw last week with Arizona against Baltimore, they were just like, screw this. We're not running the football. We're just going to throw it 80% of the time, basically, with Kyler Murray. And I think the Chiefs, you know, that's their natural inclination anyway. They want to just throw it a bunch of
times. Yeah.
Last week, they threw it 67% of the time against Oakland. So I think Darwin Thompson would have all the premium touches that you want from a fantasy perspective because they'd be coming through the air. And I'd much rather have any touch that my running back is getting coming from a pass from Patrick Mahomes than from a handoff from Patrick Mahomes. So I'm in complete agreement with you. That is the news we will certainly monitor during the course of the week. But let's just assume everyone's healthy, everyone's able to play. This is actually an interesting spot for me because I think this game might end up being owned more than it should.
Yep.
I'm a little bit concerned there. And I do think Baltimore's defense is quite good. And I think Baltimore's game plan would be, I don't think it would necessarily change in terms of ball control because I think they'd still be trying to hit those big plays that they get with Lamar in the passing game. But everybody's price is coming up. You know, Mark Andrews is getting more expensive. Marquise Brown is getting more expensive. I think it's very clear that that's where the offense is funneling through for Baltimore. On the Kansas City side, you know, Sammy Watkins is still pretty expensive. Travis Kelce is the most expensive tight end on the slate. So it's harder for me to find price tags that I'm super excited by. Like, Mecole Hardman jumped like 1500 on FanDuel. DeMarcus Robinson jumped like 2K on FanDuel in terms of price tags. So you're not getting those cheap price tags anymore. I do think this game has the best chance of the games on the slate to explode offensively in terms of getting, you know, a game that's into the 30s. So from a game stack perspective, I am intrigued and I plan to use it some, but I don't know that I will use it necessarily as much as the field in terms of my early look at the slate.
Yeah, and my inclination here, just from a theory perspective, is to use more Mecole Hardman than DeMarcus Robinson, because I think everyone's going to be excited about Robinson from last week. He just absolutely smashed. It was like 170 plus yards and two touchdowns, and yet they played almost identical amount of snaps and were targeted each six times. So if Robinson is going to rise up because of the recency bias, I think I would want to have more Hardman there. But I agree with you. Like, if I'm playing multiple guys from one offense here, I'm running it back with the other one, because I think this game does have the best chance of being like a track meet.
Yeah, and both Hardman and DeMarcus Robinson scored twice last week, but only one counted for Mecole Hardman. I know that was very tilting for a lot of DFSers out there. A very long touchdown pass that was called back due to a hold. Sammy Watkins, I think, is in a great bounce back spot, but early ownership looks like it's still going to be there. Unfortunately, but Watkins had all the targets, all the things you'd want last week. The ball just found its way to the end zone to the other guys. So I feel like Watkins is still a good play. If I'm playing the Baltimore side of things, I'm still very much playing the Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews situation. It's very difficult to project as a guy who like spends all his time every day in the projections, because these guys are still not playing like the full complement of snaps. The snap rates increased substantially for Marquise Brown last week, so that was a good sign, but the target shares are so freaking condensed in terms of how frequently that they're getting targeted that it's hard not to be intrigued by them, but it's also hard to put your median expectation all the way up there just on two games. But basically 25% of the snaps that Marquise Brown has seen, he's getting targeted, and Mark Andrews is around 21%. That's just incredibly concentrated offense. The last note that I'll leave you with for this game is that first week one for Baltimore, we saw both Gus Edwards and Justice Hill mixed in against the Dolphins, a team that they probably expected to blow out. Week two, in a more competitive game environment, we did not see Gus Edwards mixed in until the very end of the game, a very little Justice Hill. It was the Mark Ingram show. I don't think he'll come with much ownership. And if the game does play slower, he would be a potentially beneficial option. The thing that is concerning is obviously the losing the goal line usage to Lamar Jackson and sharing so much of that rushing upside. But I think he's going to be one of the lower owned pieces of this game. And if you want to play the game but not game stack it and assume the game like comes in kind of on the under or plays slower, Mark Ingram is somewhat interesting, more so for me on FanDuel than on DraftKings, again, due to price tag. Let's move it over to Cincinnati and Buffalo. The injury notes here for the Bills, we got to keep an eye on Devin Singletary. Hamstring injury late in the game against the Giants. Wasn't on the field on Wednesday. If he's unable to go, we might see a ton of Frank Gore. And it is very strange to still be talking about Frank Gore from a fantasy relevance standpoint, but he has been the guy that they have salted away games with and given the ball to ice games away. The Bills are 6-point favorites at home here against Cincinnati. Cincinnati got run all over last week by Breida, Mostert, Jeff Wilson, just everybody left and right. So that's an injury we'll certainly have to keep an eye on. On the Bengals side, both Joe Mixon and John Ross not on the injury report on Wednesday. I thought that was good news for them. On the bad news side of things, Cordy Glenn suffered a concussion. He's in the concussion protocol. Michael Jordan, not the one that you might know from the basketball thing, but the one that plays left guard for Cincinnati, also didn't practice. So two starting offensive linemen there. A backup offensive tackle didn't practice. So definitely some O-line concerns for Cincinnati. What do you think about this game from a DFS perspective, Ricky?
I like Buffalo here. I think Mike Leone is very happy with this team so far this year. I think this is a good defense. It was a good defense last year before Ed Oliver fell. And if there's no Devin Singletary, I was just having this conversation with someone else that I think Frank Gore is a very good play this week in both seasonal and in DFS against, you mentioned it, they ran all over him last week. And you could actually run a two RB set with Buffalo with Frank Gore and Josh Allen. because they both basically play the position. And I mean, 25 implied total for Buffalo is no joke here. It's another offense where I think that Josh Allen could run enough to be viable. They could finish off a drive with a Frank Gore touchdown, and Josh Allen could have enough throwing equity that I think you could go quarterback, pass catcher, and running back on same team. I know I said I only felt good about one team doing that. I think this would be the other, especially when you look at like a Frank Gore $4,400 price tag. You really only need, you know, I mean, if he gets anywhere near his 19 rushing attempts last week, I think I would be fine with that. And, I mean, the question is, what pass catcher do you pair with Josh Allen? I think for me in tournaments of basically every single week, it's John Brown, because you're hoping for that upside for him to kind of beat the guy down the field. I know Cole Beasley's kind of more his more stable option, but if I'm playing for tournament upside, I feel like for Josh Allen to get there, long John Brown catches have to be involved.
Yeah, so John Brown's certainly the guy that I would pair for upside as well in that situation. I will note that if you're considering so how do I put this? If you're considering a game stack in a way, in a like a non-traditional game stack, what I mean by that is you don't think the game can shoot out, but you think one side can be dominant and then the other side, a receiver, can kind of come back late. We saw that happen with Cincinnati last week against San Francisco, where Cincinnati's offense was not good, but John Ross broke off a big play late. Tyler Boyd was very consistent throughout the game, and both of those guys hit. And actually, if San Francisco had their touchdowns a little bit more condensed, you might have had it so that game stack worked quite well. I actually had some of my best GPP lineups before Mahomes kind of exploded were Dalton double stacks in a game that they didn't score a lot of points, because early in the season, Cincinnati is throwing the ball so much. They've thrown the ball 74% of the time through the first 2 weeks of the season. So I do think Tyler Boyd and John Ross are still certainly in play. Only for tournaments for me, not for cash games. I'm not on Joe Mixon at this point. It is good news that he's off the injury report early in the week, but there's been a little bit too much shared workload early in the season for me with Giovanni Bernard, and the missing offensive lineman is certainly a concern here. I like Boyd more than I do Ross. I think Boyd, like those quicker intermediate routes, are a better fit for attacking Buffalo's defense, and especially if they have these offensive line woes. But yeah, for me, it's mostly Buffalo in terms of this side of the game. We'll keep an eye on that Singletary injury. If he's out, Frank Gore is very much in play on both sides for me. John Brown and Cole Beasley, I think, in this condensed offense and cheap price tags are still in play, and Josh Allen's still affordable. So I'm with you in that. I do like quite a few of the Bills' offensive players. Once again, the condensed offense of the Bills has been good early in the season. Let's move it over to Detroit and Philadelphia. This is another game where we will be focused heavily on the injury news as we approach Sunday morning. And it's mostly on the Philadelphia side. The Eagles, if you watch that Sunday night game, I tweeted and joked about how it felt like watching another remake of Final Destination. It seemed like every three plays there was a Philadelphia player that was limping over to the sideline or getting pulled off. And you know, they play also, I guess, on Thursday night the following week. So they have to be thoughtful of whether they kind of rush guys back. So it sounds like Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson are a little bit less likely to play this week. We'll see. But Corey Clement and Dallas Goedert are also on that injury list as well. Clement, not that big of a deal, but just anytime you remove one running back from the situation, it's helpful to a stable of them. And then obviously, if you remove three pass catchers in Goddard, Jackson, and Jeffrey, you just really condense the Philadelphia passing game quite a bit. We saw that on Sunday night with Nelson Agholor and Zach Ertz commanding a ton of attention. Agholor is priced around the minimum on both sites, $4,800 on FanDuel. I think it's $3,600 on DraftKings. He would be a cash game lock for me and kind of a building block play if both Jackson and Jeffrey are unable to play. I think he has a more built-in rapport than Arcega Whiteside or Mac Hollins with Carson Wentz, so I think you'll continue to see high target share. And I think if both of those guys miss as well, Zach Ertz is very much in the conversation top tight end for consideration as well. He got over 30% of the targets in that Week 2 contest.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think Zach Ertz, if both those guys are out, are a guy that I'm going to like ultra boost to the levels where I haven't boosted a tight end so far, because I think the tight ends in that Kansas City-Baltimore game are going to get a lot of love. And you look at Zach Ertz last week, 16 targets. This Detroit team has got to prove it to us that it can cover tight ends, because for the past few seasons it has not been able to do so. My only concern here is that, you know, Detroit, I mean, they – in terms of average plays per game so far, they look high, but that's because they had that overtime game in week one. Last week, they were back to 58 plays. The question is, do they slow down the game enough where that affects this Philly stack? Because if Philly is going to go crazy, I feel like it's going to be condensed enough where I know where it's going. Nelson Agholor, Zach Ertz, and I mean, I think you could play the upside of one of the other guys. Mac Hollins, I think I would personally play the upside of Arcega-Whiteside, who they say they want to get more involved this week. But I'm just not sure about that Detroit pace. So I feel good about Agholor, and I feel extremely good about Zach Ertz. I mean, that is definitely a guy that I will personally be boosting. The question is, Drew, how do you feel about pairing Wentz with multiple pass catchers against this slow Detroit Lions team?
You know, so I think that brings up a good conversation about how I think about stacking quarterbacks. I think a lot of times you need to think about it outside the box with how you approach it. Your quarterback stack should largely be generated by how good the skill players are relative to their value and how condensed the offense is. So for me, when you have a bunch of guys out and it condenses the offense and the price tags are really good, I'm in on the quarterback because I'm in on the pass catchers. And so I think a lot of times people start with the quarterback and say, oh, I want to stack this guy because I think they're going to score a lot of points this week. But if it's an offense that's going to throw, you know, three or four touchdowns to three different guys, it's going to be harder to hit that tournament winning upside. So I would definitely be in on Carson Wentz. I think it's a pretty good price tag. I do, in general, think quarterback upsides on teams without Deshaun Jackson when he's out, I do think they diminish a little bit, because I think he's a very important field stretcher that opens up a lot of things, but these price tags are too good. And I'll just say this, Ricky, since you like to talk about boosting, I don't boost. I just lean on the projections. You're not going to have to boost a lot of Zach Ertz to get a lot of Zach Ertz on this league. He's going to project as one of the strongest tight end values, especially on DraftKings, where his price tag is below 6,000. He's priced similarly to George Kittle, and we've got Zach Ertz as clearly the top value at the position. So I think a very strong cash game play. And I wouldn't have any issue playing cash game lineups with both Ertz and Agholor. I think you're locking in a lot of receptions there. Let's keep it moving to the Giants in Tampa Bay. The Giants, it sounds like Sterling Shepard will be back this week. He was out of concussion protocol and practicing on Wednesday. Cody Latimer did not practice on Wednesday. He did end up playing last week, so that's something to keep an eye on. Obviously, it's the Daniel Jones era. It's the beginning in New York with Eli Manning getting benched. We will have to keep an eye on one of the offensive line injuries. There is Kevin Zeitler, their star guard, was unable to practice Wednesday due to shoulder issues, so that's something to keep an eye on. With Tampa Bay, there's not too much. Jameis did pop up with a foot injury, which is something to just keep an eye on. It didn't really limit it in practice, so I think he's fine, and I'm not too concerned about him being absent, but it is something to pay attention to. Devin White, the rookie linebacker for Tampa Bay, didn't practice on Wednesday after hurting his knee in week two. That's not a great sign for his availability since that was, you know, Thursday night game, so extra time and still not able to get on the field. But I think the big interesting one, this is a game that has actually dominated a lot of the conversation around the Daily Roto Slack chat in terms of the potential upside with stacking Tampa Bay relative to expected ownership this week. What are your thoughts on how to look at the Tampa Bay situation?
Well, I'm probably the wrong guy to talk to here, because this is my Mike Gesicki of this season, has been the Tampa Bay offense. I bought the hype on Jameis. I bought the hype on Godwin. I bought the hype on O.J. Howard, and it's panned out on exactly one of those guys. But the premise was this Tampa Bay defense was going to be awful, so they were going to be, you know, have to play in a lot of shootouts. and Jameis is going to have to throw a ton. And all of a sudden, you got a Tampa Bay defense that's allowing just 235 pass yards a game, which is, you know, below average so far. Now, I think a lot of that has to do with them having played Cam Newton the last time out. I hope Daniel Jones is more competent than Eli Manning. I mean, they were 27th in time of possession. I'm not necessarily sure that's going to go up, which means Tampa should have the ball a ton here. I think this is finally the game where you could see the breakout. You know, the middle of the field has been open. Yeah, Bruce Arians talking that his exact quote, I think, is O.J. Howard will get the football. So I feel good about going back to Jameis and two pass catchers here. We talked about, you know, Baltimore, by the way, dominates time of possession, so you could see Kansas City having the ball less. There's just a lot of potential holes in that game. And, you know, another offense that I feel good about and one that is fully healthy as opposed to the Eagles would be this Tampa Bay team. I, like the rest of guys in the Slack chat, feel pretty good about going Jameis and multiple pass catchers here.
I feel like I'm podcasting in like 1986 when you're talking about time of possession stuff, Ricky. It just really upsets me that we're even talking. I'm just going to move on. So Tampa Bay, the one, I think Jameis double stacks are certainly interesting. The thing that I'll note is that I'm surprised the early ownership projections are there for Tampa Bay, meaning Godwin's projected for like 15%. Mike Evans is projected for like 15%. The guy who's not is obviously O.J. Howard, who's certainly put the O in your fantasy box scores to start the season. And I think he's interesting. The Giants have always struggled covering the tight end position. They just haven't invested heavily throughout their organization philosophy in the linebacker position, so they just don't have athletic linebackers historically, and as a result, a lot of teams have beaten them up with the tight end. I think it's a very good spot for Howard in tournaments relative to the ownership. I thought it was going to be a really good spot for Jameis double stacks, but early ownership has Jameis at like 10 and Godwin Evans at like 13 to 15, and so it's not as exciting as I was hoping it would be. In terms of New York, obviously Saquon Barkley is always in play. I don't think it's the best week for him from a cash game perspective. I think Christian McCaffrey is a better cash game target, getting that big potential play boost going up against Arizona. I think Dalvin Cook is a cheaper option, is probably a little bit better as well, but Saquon's certainly in play. I think Sterling Shepard back will help Evan Ingram quite a bit. Evan Ingram got kind of the target volume you'd want to expect. He ended up like fine, like 6 for 50 or something like that, which is fine at a tight end position. But I think a lot of the upside is brought back in when you have other threats on the offense. And so I actually think it's a better thing for a guy like Evan Ingram. If I was to bring back options in stacks in this game, let's say I'm stacking the Tampa Bay side, I think Ingram would actually be one of the targets I'm interested in those lineups that you don't use O.J. Howard. In the lineups that you do use O.J. Howard, I would still consider Ingram as a viable like double tight end option, but I think I would be more inclined to look towards Saquon and hope Saquon can bust a big play that kind of breaks open the pace of the game. That's my take on Tampa Bay and the Giants. Let's move over to Arizona and Carolina. This one's interesting to me because the total on Arizona is pretty modest. You know, Carolina's going into Arizona here. We're not sure on Cam Newton's situation, which is the big thing to focus on. I'm actually seeing some places have the line back up with it looks like that's a bad feed. Okay, that line is still off the board, so waiting for that. But early on, it was a lower implied total for Arizona than I expected. Obviously, we'll just have to see what the deal is with Cam. We're not expecting him to play based on some of the comments around the team and based on the fact that, you know, he hasn't looked himself, the foot injury that he suffered in the preseason. And I let me just get my Cam Newton take off, because I think everybody was losing their minds on these primetime island games where there's nothing else to pay attention to. Cam looked awful, obviously. I think everybody could have pointed that out. I thought Cam looked fine on like three-step drops where he got the ball out quickly. So I think his arm strength actually looked fine. I think what looked off for him, for me, was the mobility. He did not look comfortable moving in the pocket and creating more time for himself. And obviously, you know, scrambling it as a whole has just been off the plate entirely. So I think that if Cam can get his foot healed, I think there's the potential that Cam rebounds in a big way in the second half. As someone who's heavily invested in Cam, maybe I'm being optimistically biased, but I would like to see him sit a little while and kind of get his body right And I think if his legs are healthy, I think his arm looks fine to me from an arm strength perspective, which was not the case end of last season. Greg Olsen, also a limited participant on Wednesday practice. That's a usual thing for him. I don't think I'm too concerned there. I do think if you're playing in season long, now is a great time to sell on Greg Olsen. Just I don't think you're going to have a better peak performance than 100 plus yards on a primetime game. And certainly the quarterback situation is in flux going forward. For the Cardinals, David Johnson was a full go at Wednesday's practice with that wrist issue. So I think that's great news for David Johnson owners. Larry Fitzgerald gets Wednesdays off at this point in his career, so nothing to be concerned about there. The thing that stood out to me most about this game from a DFS perspective is Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk are still stupid cheap on both sides, and for me are going to be very, very, very strong cash game plays.
Yeah, I'm completely with you there. I mean, I think the plays that stand out here are Christian McCaffrey, because you feel like they're going to feed the beast, especially with Cam Newton likely out. And on the other side, it was the Arizona pass catchers, who, by the way, Mike and I had a bet before the season that I had Larry Fitzgerald in the top three of targets on this Arizona team. So far, so good. But with his health, that wasn't included in the bet. I'm just praying that this old man can stay healthy. But yeah, you mentioned the price tag, $5,100 on DraftKings. Like, I'm going to have Kyler Murray and feel good about it for the first time all year. Again, I think Carolina offense has
the potential. Sorry, I have to interrupt. Have a bet with Mike that Larry Fitzgerald will finish within the top three pass catchers on Arizona?
Top three in targets on his own team. Mike thought that, he liked Keyshawn Johnson, he liked David Johnson, wow, and he liked Kirk. We're talking about August.
Yeah, I feel like usually this is not the case, but Ricky, you're on the right side of this bet. I feel like you pulled one over on old Michael Leone. I feel like Mike was a little bit too optimistic on the young boys. So as long as Fitz stays healthy, I think you're looking good.
Have I ever been on the side of the old man either? I mean, this is like bizarre.
I mean, all
world
of this is very confusing. I thought you were going to say, have you ever been on the right side of a bet? And I was also going to say no. But it's great. You got both the old man and, I think, on the right side of the bet. So yeah, sorry to interrupt for your Arizona love.
No, I was just saying that I feel confident about them. And the run back to me would either be Christian McCaffrey, which is what I think most people are going to do, or on DraftKings specifically, I think that Greg Olsen price tag is cheap enough that, you know, maybe a young quarterback just looking for a security blanket when things get rough. I know Christian McCaffrey can be that, but just the price tag with him, I don't feel like paying the price for either of the receivers with a young quarterback like this. I just don't see it.
Yeah, the other thing I'd note is that Kyle Allen is just 4K. And Brock Osweiler won someone $1 million last year against the Bears defense. So at 4K, I think Kyle Allen would certainly be in play in tournaments. I probably wouldn't go there in cash. I think it's probably an unnecessary risk. But if he does get the start, 4K is very, very interesting on DraftKings. Yeah. I do think Christian McCaffrey is the top projected, the second projected running back, sorry, on the slate, but behind Ezekiel Elliott. But I think a very, very strong cash game target. If you're talking cash games, I think he's probably the only guy on Carolina I'd consider a cash game target. Everybody else for me would be in tournaments. On the Arizona side, David Johnson's cheap enough that I think you can consider him in cash, but I really do like those price tags on Kirk and Fitzgerald. And I think the Kyler Murray explosion is coming soon. So I want to be on Kyler and GPPs. If you basically, you know, that first half against Detroit was awful, but since then, I mean, the dude was great against in the second half and into overtime, and then against Baltimore was able to move them up and down the field against a pretty good Baltimore defense. So I'm in on Kyler Murray in GPPs. I think he's even viable in cash games at 5,800 and 7,200 on the two sites. Very much in on him. Let's move over to Pittsburgh, San Francisco, where once again we have more quarterback injury issues. Obviously, Ben Roethlisberger is lost for the year. And that's going to open up a lot of time for Mason Rudolph here. The Steelers are, you know, almost touchdown underdogs on the road. In terms of the Steelers, I think, you know, we also have to wait and see on James Conner, who has a knee issue. He said he's fine and he expects to play on Sunday. We will, you know, continue to monitor the information. Short of James Conner sitting and it opening up like Jalen Samuels, I think at this point, pretty much all the Pittsburgh guys are just GPP only until you see a little bit more. I do think there's intrigue with both James Washington. There's, you know, there's all sorts of narratives around that with him playing with Mason Rudolph in college, with him starting with Mason Rudolph in the preseason, with Dante Moncrief's snaps coming way down last week. I think there's reasons to consider Washington as a cheap flyer in MME. I think Juju is certainly worth a play with the ownership coming way down and the price tag still intriguing. But I think it's only tournaments for those guys. Do you have any difference of opinion for the Pittsburgh side?
Not really, to be honest. I think the San Francisco side, to me, was the one that was the interesting conversation, because what do you make of this backfield now? They announced that, you know, Wilson was going to take the red zone snaps now. This Pittsburgh team, by the way, has graded as a pretty good run defense at this point, second behind only Baltimore, and you have a mess of a backfield. I think this is just mostly a stay away from me this week, where I think some people are going to try and, you know, pick the right guy here. I mean, Mostert looks certainly explosive. Matt Breida was like 10 yards a carry last week, and you had the Wilson touchdowns. I'm not sure this is going to be as commanding of a spot where they can just run all over Pittsburgh, if there's one thing that looks like they do well at this point, it's defend the run. So I think I'm more likely to go with like a pass catcher or two. And to me, there's only three guys in that pool that I'm interested in: Deebo Samuel, Marquise Goodwin, and George Kittle.
Yeah, and we should also note the Samuel and Pettis snap thing is weird. Pettis barely played the first week, then he played more than Samuel the second week, but Samuel was targeted super, super heavily. And so I don't have a good feel for that situation. And so I probably won't play a lot of it. I think this is going to be a situation where it's like Kittle or bust for me on San Francisco this week. I don't mind Goodwin just because the price tag is cheap enough in GPPs that he can kind of make it off in one big play. And I don't hate Samuel, but I won't have a ton of them. I wanted to play a lot of Breida while he's priced below 6K on FanDuel, because I do think he's a very explosive back. But them coming out and saying that Jeff Wilson is, you know, going to be getting those goal line looks is very concerning, because I was hoping that that was just a situation where the game was in hand and Jeff Wilson was getting those carries. A three-headed running back monster is just not one that I'm looking forward to attacking. Let's move it over to New Orleans, Seattle, another quarterback injury situation. No Drew Brees. We don't know who's going to be quarterback. There was some quotes from Sean Payton basically that suggested to a beat reporter who asked about Taysom Hill and getting snaps as the number two. And Payton basically said, you're assuming he's the number two. So I don't know what that means. They also said that they are going to prepare to play as if they have two quarterbacks with Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. That just muddies everything up. Taysom Hill is a guy that is exciting in terms of, like, you know, he's got like that Tim Tebow-esque type of fantasy potential if he was getting all the snaps, but you can't really take shots on a quarterback who might not get most of the snaps. So I don't know what to do with the Saints offense. Kamara, I think, is interesting in GPPs simply because he was so disappointing last week, and I think the ownership is going to be really, really low. I think Michael Thomas is viable with ownership that's really, really low, but I would prefer Bridgewater throwing as opposed to Taysom Hill throwing. I don't see myself having a ton of exposure to this New Orleans offense at this point.
No, and it sucks because Seattle's a team that I think their secondary, people still don't, you know, fully realize how bad they are, because Seattle's been a defense that has the name value in terms of their defense for quite some time, but I don't see, you know, a New Orleans thrower that can get the ball to these pass catchers enough for me to be excited. So I agree with you. New Orleans, not a team that I'm overly interested in this week.
And then Seattle, I've been excited about the concentration in the offense with a lot of the offense running through Lockett and Metcalf. Chris Carson has had some fumble issues that has opened up the door for Rashad Penny. But I think this game's going to play very slow. I think both of these teams are going to want to play a little bit more ball control, slow the game down, and I think New Orleans defense is very good. I like New Orleans defense quite a bit. So I actually am not super excited about this game from a DFS perspective. Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf were limited at Wednesday's practice. I don't think it's something to worry about. David Moore was limited, so he might be back in the mix. I did want to drop the wonderful stat that Jerron Brown has played almost 100 snaps, 99 snaps, and has not accumulated a target through the first 2 weeks of the season. So shout out to Jerron Brown and running all those wind sprints. Keep getting your work in. But yeah, there's not a lot that I love from this game.
We can move on.
All right, let's move it on to Houston and the Chargers for the final game that we'll be covering on this main slate. This game is very interesting to me on a number of fronts. This game has an implied total, or a total, excuse me, reaching into the higher 40s. I do think this game has a chance to play slower in terms of lower number of plays. Houston is typically a team that runs a lot of plays and their defense limits opponents, but the Chargers are kind of the same. And both of these offenses, I think, match up reasonably well with the opposing defense. In terms of the injury situation to focus on, DeAndre Hopkins and Laremy Tunsil were limited on Wednesday. So was Will Fuller. Will Fuller's issue was a personal thing. Hopkins an ankle. I don't think it's a big deal. Deshaun Watson was not listed on the injury report, so there's nothing to worry about there. Keenan Allen was limited with a knee issue. And just given Keenan Allen's injury history, something to monitor, but I don't think it's a big deal. Mike Williams was full, which I think is great news. After last week with all the injury concerns there, he actually looked pretty healthy. He played, I believe, 60%+ of the snaps. So I think that was a good situation for him. So not a lot on the injury front. From a DFS perspective, the price tags on a guy like Austin Ekeler are getting higher and higher. Are you still buying?
I think you have to with the role that he has on this team. It's not like he's just got a high market share of the rushing. He's involved in the passing game quite a bit as well. I mean, you look at last week, 6 targets, 7 targets the week before that. I just love this role. They're game planning for him. They're setting up screens with blockers ahead. I mean, he's just a stud to me. 7,200 is well within reason. I mean, he's still a guy that I'm going to have heavy exposure to for the third straight week here. I think the interesting conversation from the backfield perspective is on the other side of this game. Like, what the hell happened to Duke Johnson last week? And do we think that both these guys are just going to be game flow dependent from here on out, and there's just going to be games where Duke Johnson fades? Or was that an anomaly, and we think Duke Johnson is going to be, you know, back heavily involved like we expect him to be for the remainder of the year? And I think I am fine speculating with Duke Johnson here, especially with Houston as the underdog in this game, with them playing from behind, that I think we look and see his targets, you know, a lot closer to the 5 from week 1 than, I think, is this a typo, 1 target last week?
Yeah, they played from ahead, and they just kind of tucked the air out of the ball. And I think what they're going to want to do is they're going to want to try to protect Deshaun Watson from as many hits as they can. So those games that they are going to play from ahead, I think you're going to see just game flow, situational dependent running backs spots here, which is why I think Duke Johnson is interesting as a bring back option on Charger stacks. If you think the Chargers offense can go off, I think that's very interesting. I think Hopkins is fine there. Fuller always has kind of the big play upside. But I actually think stacks in a different direction are kind of interesting this week, too, with Ekeler and the Chargers defense. Chargers defense is really cheap on both sides, $2,500 on DraftKings, $3,800, I believe it is, on FanDuel. Deshaun Watson takes a ton of sacks. I could see the Chargers playing from ahead here, and I could see their pass rush really getting to Deshaun Watson. So I think while a lot of people will be focused on there's a lot of compelling skill players from this game, I'm actually fairly interested in that running back defense stack with Ekeler and the Chargers D.
Would you play Duke Johnson with that one as well? Because it still could set up your game flow. It still could, you know, a lot of sacks.
It still certainly could. I generally don't play offensive players against my own defense on full main slates. I don't think it's a bad option if you group it out where it's just wide receivers or you know, primary pass catchers. So Duke would certainly fit that. But I personally probably would not. I do think if you're playing like Rivers, Keenan, Ekeler, or Rivers, Ekeler, Mike Williams, I think Duke makes sense there as a bring back, not only because of the game flow, but also because of the prices. Like, it's hard to make Rivers, Keenan, Ekeler, Hopkins lineups. That's just a lot of salary. You're going to have to fill out everybody else with kind of a cheaper option. So I think that's one of the knocks against Hopkins this week, is simply that he's tougher to bring back on Charger stacks because the Charger stacks themselves are likely going to be expensive.
Yeah, I guess the only other comment I have here is that Mike Williams' snaps actually went down last week in terms of percentage, and I thought he, you know, week to week should be getting healthier. I guess it's the NFL, so you're taking so many hits, so who actually gets healthier? But What do you make of his role? Because I didn't see him as like a 60% snap sort of guy. I thought he was the two to Keenan's one. But if this really is just Keenan Allen dominating the snaps, I think you have to feel good about him in all formats.
Yeah, I think Keenan is going to be a target hog with Hunter Henry out. I just like Mike Williams is going to be the guy they use to stretch the field. Travis Benjamin is used somewhat similarly, and that just opens up a lot of the underneath stuff for both Eckler and Keenan Allen. So I think you're going to have more consistency around those guys and less consistency around the Mike Williams field stretcher. But I think Mike Williams will be the guy when they start to convert more in the red zone. Obviously, they struggled with that last week, missing field goals as well. But I think he'll get more of those red zone looks. I think that's it, though, Ricky. We made it a little bit lengthy on this 13-game slate. Would have liked to keep it a little bit tighter, but the two of us just can't shut up. So I will end this pretty quickly here with saying thank you all for listening. If you are enjoying the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast, please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. That keeps us doing this podcast for free for you. If you are interested in more of the information that we have on the premium side of things, showdown slate breakdowns, our optimizer, our research tools, all the different things that we have over at dailyroto.com, use the promo code LAUNCH to get yourself 10% off. And if you're a sports bettor, make sure to check out the Sports Grid model that we have predicting both totals and sides for the NFL this season. Did very well last year. It's free up on sportsgrid.com. That'll be it for Ricky and myself and the rest of the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Pod crew. We wish you the best of luck in your games this week, and tune in on Friday as Davis Maddock breaks down some picks against the spread.